Welcome to episode 16 of The Andrew Hansen Show. My guest this week was the now familiar shrink for entrepreneurs, Peter Shallard. I find that I can't discuss enough the mental challenges of entrepreneurs because the solutions to those problems, I really think, represent a large part of the difference between a success in business and all other outcomes. A testament to the depth of this subject, my chat with Peter this week delved into just two of the many other aspects in that mental puzzle, namely the issue of accountability, what it means, why we avoid it, and how to get more of it, and goal setting. In particular, the most up-to-date science on goal setting and how it should, and indeed shouldn't, be done to maximize outcomes for human beings. It was an enlightening chat with some concrete tips you can put into action to be more effective starting today. I'll turn over to Peter now. I hope you enjoy it. Peter Shallard, welcome back to the podcast.
It's good. It feels great to be back.
It's a pleasure to have you back. I thought we kind of first had to talk just very briefly about your coffee situation. I've been following you on Instagram now, which I find quite enjoyable, I must say.
Oh, have you really? Interesting.
Yep, I have. You're an espresso at home guy now. What's going on here?
It's not. I'm just recently a pretentious Instagram photo-taking espresso at home guy now, but I have been an espresso at home guy for a long time.
I see.
That's just been on the down low. So I'm confident to say that I'm a bit of an expert at it, actually.
Is that right?
Yeah, and I enjoy the kind of struggle of it. You know, like a lot of people, are like, oh, who has the time? It's such a hassle. But I like that part of it. So I actually have an espresso. You couldn't even really call it an espresso machine. I have an espresso device that uses no electricity and is entirely hand-powered.
Are you talking about an AeroPress?
No, it's not an AeroPress. It's like this big old, it's a real espresso machine with like a basket, just like you see, like a little portafilter thing, just like you see at a coffee shop. But you put, there's these big metal levers and you like lean your full body weight in and like put thousands of pounds per square inch of pressure into the coffee grinds and squeeze out an espresso.
That's mental. How can you control the pressure if you're pushing it down with your hand? You're going to get inconsistent results.
No, that's the thing, is that you've got to like find this very calm and peaceful zen place inside of your mind and consistently apply pressure, which for me is a daily early morning reminder of what life is all about and how to win.
Amazing.
I'm just kidding about that last part, but it's a lot of fun. I enjoy trying to figure out, like, sometimes I'll literally be like, oh yeah, I got that one really good, and then I, you know, and then there's this reward that I nailed it and I've got the perfect coffee.
There's so much we have to talk about here, but we're going to move on before we lose everybody who doesn't care about coffee. The real topic of the chat today, we wanted to sort of go into two things. We were going to do accountability and goal setting. So this accountability thing, we touched on it when we talked about when we had the webinar with you that few weeks back. Accountability seems so weird to me. Everybody's heard of it. Everybody knows the value of this in the context of business and productivity, getting anything done. But for entrepreneurs, the self-employed in particular, it seems weird because accountability is like the thing that you were supposed to not want. The whole reason that you started or you left a job or you chose this path rather than another one was so that you would have less accountability. You wouldn't have a boss to answer to. You wouldn't have people telling you what to do. So it's this kind of like need and not want accountability. What's the deal with that? What's so important about accountability in this context?
Oh yeah, this is the kind of question that I sort of ponder and think about with my high quality espresso every morning. This is a deep one.
Got it.
This is the thing about this issue, is that you're right. There is a problem here in that most people who start businesses do so because they want to be free from having to have a report on their boss's desk every Friday afternoon. They want to be free from that kind of scrutiny. That they want to be free from all that hassle. In other words, they want freedom. The problem with freedom as an idea is that it really represents just a total escape of everything. And that the issue with freedom is that if you get total and complete and utter freedom, what does that really mean? I think in a weird way, when you see one of those kind of homeless drifter guys who you can smell from like 50 feet away, that they have a lot of freedom that other people don't enjoy. It might not be a kind of freedom that people are writing books about that's kind of sexy and sort of in right now, but it is freedom. And so there's this weird paradox with freedom where if you make your whole life about that and chasing it, you never have any reason, like you're totally free from constraints or pressure to do anything, it's actually very difficult psychologically to kind of do anything. And so I think freedom is this weird, there's just this weird Zen paradox about it. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs kind of grapple with that. And I think it's a bit of a false flag, to be honest. I think that it's something that's like really marketed to a lot of entrepreneurs. It's something that a lot of people are told they want to have. And initially, when we're feeling tied down by a 9-to-5 job and our boss or other thing, or a lack of kind of financial autonomy and agency, it's easy to kind of say, yeah, freedom, that's everything that I want. But there's something dangerous about building your whole life around the goal of escaping bonds. And that's the thing about freedom, is like kind of psycholinguistically, it can't be defined without something that you're running away from. Freedom only makes sense in the context of escaping a cage.
Yes.
You know? And so it kind of messes people up in that sense. And so I think that a better question to ask is like, what is it that we really want? What is it that entrepreneurs are really after? What would it look like to have total freedom? Would you do nothing but lay by the pool and drink champagne and eat chocolate eclairs and like just have everything that you could ever want? I suspect that if any entrepreneur achieved that level of success, they'd find themselves a lot like Richard Branson, who just can't wait to leap up out of his hammock on his tropical island and go and start all of these interesting businesses. He's doing it all the time, which kind of tells you like the freedom is not what it's all about. That was just something that sort of happened along the way. And so I think that, and we're going to get to accountability in a second. I think that what entrepreneurs are really after is that right out of the gate, people want some financial stability and independence. And when they have that, what they're really looking for is this idea of leverage, to be the kind of highest leverage version of themselves they can be, which means when you're working on something, producing incredible impact, producing incredible like financial results, when you're not working on something, having the ability to be totally present when you're just taking time off and spending it with your family or the people who matter or just by yourself, right? Like having this kind of awake and intentional life that is only accessible to people who have built really successful businesses and have that kind of leverage in their life where they don't need to be working all the time, or where they're not constantly worrying about bills or what the boss needs them to have done by Monday or, you know, whatever it may be. So I think that when we get clear on what we really want, that goal of freedom starts to make less sense. And this idea of being this kind of in the zone person who's living this highly leveraged life becomes more attractive. And if that's what people really want, if that's what entrepreneurs are truly after, then accountability as a way of getting there, as like a powerful brain hack that accelerates the rate at which you become that kind of person, is, you know, it's the ultimate kind of shortcut. It's the ultimate and only hack there really is. That's my thesis anyway.
Right. It sounds like kind of a baby in a bathwater issue, where even if you want to cast off some restrictions that you have, if you, by having a 9-to-5, if you cast all of them off, you might find yourself in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, this is the thing, and this is what it's very unpopular and unsexy to say. I hate to say it, but there's no business of any lasting kind of legs or value that's been around and, you know, paid the founder a really nice paycheck for anything more than a minute, a hot minute, that wasn't created without someone experiencing significant discomfort and pushing themselves to do things that require courage and create, you know, real value in the world.
You mean an absence of freedom?
Right. And that, all of that is an absence of freedom. Like every single successful business that's been created in the history of mankind has had somebody who's leaned into the discomfort and pushed through it and done the work. And then this incredible thing has been birthed out of it. And sure, that thing might let them lay by the pool and just totally chill and, you know, drink cocktails all day. But at some point there was this thing that happened that was the opposite of freedom that kind of created it all. And that's what I mean. There's this paradox. There's this kind of freedom is definitely a part of it. I'm not saying throw the whole baby out with the bathwater. It's important. My experience, though, is that when entrepreneurs actually create the freedom, they lie by the pool for a little bit, and then they kind of figure out that that's not actually what they wanted all along anyway, that is actually kind of a thing that people have in mind, you know, when they haven't experienced it. But as soon as they do, they kind of move on to something else and realize that's not what it was all about. So, yeah, I think if I could do like if I could be on one kind of mission in life, it might be to kind of get entrepreneurs to let go of this hang up that they've got around freedom, because I think it's dangerous. If you're chasing freedom, you can sometimes make these weird decisions to not take action on the things that in a weird and ironic way will give you so much freedom or so much leverage to kind of have freedom if that's what you want down the road.
Right. Okay, so I wanted to take just half a step back here to clarify on a term you mentioned. You're talking about living a highly leveraged life. Can you just tell us quickly what that means and how that's different to this kind of freedom / restriction cycle?
Yeah, I mean, I think that let's talk about like what entrepreneurs and what business owners really want, right? Like, I think that everybody in this game wants to create financial success for themselves, right? They want to have freedom in the most basic sense, that like they don't really have to worry about anything to do with money. They have enough money to do whatever they want to do. So there's a sort of a functional definition of wealth that's in there somewhere. But I think that defining that as freedom can be a really slippery slope, because I know plenty of, and I've seen plenty of small business owners or digital entrepreneurs are especially guilty of this, who will spin up a business that makes, you know, $1,000 or $2,000 a month and enables them to kind of, you know, cut their overhead and just sort of play video games all day and have freedom, or move to some part of the world where that money gets them really far and technically have freedom. But then they go and kind of semi-retire, and the business kind of never grows, or, you know, worse, maybe slowly dies because they're not paying attention to it. Mm-hmm. So I think that entrepreneurs want wealth, but the definition of leverage in terms of having the money to be able to push levers in your life to be able to do whatever it is that you want to do is really kind of important. But I think that as a concept, leverage can apply to so much more. It can mean that you're free to play with ideas that you're passionate about, that you've got the tools that you need, the levers that you need to take ideas that you're interested and curious about or passionate about and just spend time studying them, or create something with them, or build something, or scale something, to work on projects instead of kind of in them all the time. Leverage is being able to over deliver on promises that you set. It's being able to kind of act on everything that you learn. It's being able to pursue passions and curiosities that you have as far as you want, as far as you possibly can, because you've got the time to do it. It's being able to kind of live well and with intention. And I think a huge part of it is having the resources, again, the leverage, to eliminate everything in your life that's low leverage, that's a drain, to outsource those chores, those, like, you know, those things in your life that don't add any value and just suck up your time, so that you can really lose yourself in what you love, so that you can be present, so that you can connect with, you know, whoever matters in your life fully and without distraction, so you can seek out new experiences, so you can stretch yourself, so you can play, so you can do things that would make your 7-year-old self, if he or she were around to see it, just grin from ear to ear, because this is what life's supposed to be about, right? And I think that when people get this entrepreneurial bug and they start thinking about, you know, I want to do this, I want to go be the captain of my own ship, they glom onto this idea of freedom. But what I just described, which I call kind of being highly leveraged or being a high leverage person, is really what it's all about. There's this kind of polymath vision that they have of living their life at this high level, having every kind of spoke on the old wheel of life maxed out in every direction. And financial freedom for sure is a part of that, but there's so much more to it. And I think that when we make that the definition of success, which is so much more fulfilling and useful and practical, then suddenly, you know, the tools that we can enlist in our quest to get those things, to become high leverage, start to make a whole lot more sense. I think that there's a lot of entrepreneurs who are, or aspiring entrepreneurs who are so obsessed with freedom that when they have an opportunity in front of them that requires them to lean in, push themselves, do a lot of hard work and be held accountable, hold themselves accountable, frankly, to push through and do it, they sometimes just hang back and hesitate and self-sabotage because they're kind of thinking, oh, if I do all of this, am I still going to have freedom? You know, and they miss out on this incredible opportunity to have something so much more important than just the freedom to kind of play video games at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday, or, you know, to lay by the pool at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday. Right. You know, there's so much more to it than that. So, yeah, that's kind of what I think.
I get that. I get the difference now between that freedom seeking and this highly leveraged, which means a lot of times quite accountable vision of having a rewarding life. That's I appreciate the definition. I wanted to kind of put a flag in that point for a second, because I think that's really worth talking about. You painted a picture of this kind of life, which I too have come to really admire, really consider it something of a pinnacle of human existence, this kind of life where you have had a certain level of success in your pursuits, probably by giving up a lot of freedom. You just put in the hours, you really toiled it out for years, building up a business, building up a reputation, let's say, and then you came to a point where those goals having been achieved, you had this new level of freedom to pursue projects that you were passionate about, to explore curiosities, to do things that you found enjoyable, but still in the context, or still in a productive context, still in a way that is the opposite to sitting on a beach and drinking cocktails. There's a couple of examples, and I think you'll know both of them, but like my wife and I have been talking about these recently. One is Jerry Seinfeld. It's an easy one to point to, you know, like comedians in cars getting coffee thing.
Right.
This is obviously a passion project for him, and he's really just made this up. He's just made up a project that includes all these things that he loves to do in his life. It's like talking to people he already wants to talk to and driving around in cars that he likes, and he's made that a thing and he's monetized it. That's just such a cool thing to me. And if you just look at it and nothing else, it's unbelievable. It's like, how could somebody be so fortunate to get to have that kind of a life where they really make money by doing a thing that is almost entirely and purely serving them? It's just like, this is what I think's fun. But obviously that required years and years of toil and difficulty, and in his own words, I've heard him say, use the word torture in interviews. It's like he's endured a level of torture of repeating the same task, doing the same kind of work, building up this everything to get to the point where that's possible. If you can forgive me the ramble, I want to throw another one at you, which is really cool. Do you know the restaurant Noma? Famous, like, best restaurant in the world for a long time ago.
Yeah, it's somewhere in, I can't remember the country, but it's somewhere Scandinavian, right?
Yeah, I think it's in Denmark. I hope I didn't get that wrong. We'll fact check that before we publish. But that head chef guy of Noma, I follow on Instagram, and he's another incredible example. His name's Rene Redzepi. And I was watching an Instagram story of his the other day where, like, he's had this restaurant, and it's obviously been very successful. I don't believe he works there anymore, so he's got this leverage in the sense where the business that he has built up is carrying on without him, and the stuff that he does now is just literally exploring his passion and curiosity. So I'm watching this Instagram story of his where him and this team of his friends and other chefs are climbing this mountain in I don't know, maybe it's Iceland. They're climbing a mountain looking for this one leaf, this, like, it's called a mountain sorrel, this one special ingredient that only grows on this. They're literally scaling a waterfall, him and these five guys. They're like pickaxing on this waterfall, like digging through big crevices, and the guy plucks out this leaf and he's like, we found the mountain sorrel, and now he's going to go back and make some incredible dish with this thing. But that is such a ridiculous kind of a life. That's just so highly enjoyable, and it's not like that shouldn't make money. You shouldn't be able to make money by plucking obscure ingredients off of waterfalls and then selling them, but he's able to do that now because of this entire life he has had struggling, just like with no freedom, building up to this point where now that is possible for him. I love that as a picture of the pinnacle of human existence.
Yeah, totally. I mean, I think that that's the there's this weird toxic kind of belief system that's kind of prevalent amongst aspiring entrepreneurs, that we should be aiming for freedom as though it's like the cessation of ever having to do anything ever. And the dark side of that is this fine line to never doing anything ever. Like, as though ultimate freedom is just some kind of slouching kind of couch potato dream in which you just really never do anything, and you just kind of sit there and consume. You know, I don't know. Like, I can't even imagine what it's like total freedom in that respect, because the people who we really admire and the people who we look up to are actually creating incredible value almost always, even just as a side effect of what they love doing. They're just spitting, like as you said, Seinfeld, he does this thing that he in some ways would almost be doing anyway. And he has a camera crew follow him, and he creates all this value. Like, there's, you know, millions of people watch this and just get it, and it like brightens up their day, and they love it, and it's hilarious, and it's a really good. I watch those when I eat lunch sometimes, like in the middle of a busy work day. It's fantastic, you know. And I think that the chef is a really similar example where, you know, when you have it all, what is it that really matters? What are you really trying to do? Well, you're living this extraordinary life where you have the leverage to make stuff happen that you care about. And the thing is that nowhere in that definition is the freedom to do nothing even a part of it. I don't think that doing nothing is good for people, and I don't think it's what people really want. And so you're right. For small business owners who want absolute freedom and a cessation of responsibility and no need to ever do anything, you know, accountability is not right for them. It's not gonna help at all. But you know, they're gonna have much worse problems than a lack of accountability sooner or later anyway. For sure. I think we should throw out freedom and focus on leverage instead. And yeah, I think that having the leverage to be able to live your life in an extraordinary way is a way better goal, and psychologically much more fulfilling.
Yeah, I agree, and I appreciate you bringing it up. Okay, so let's say people have accepted now this idea that we want to have and need to have a certain level of accountability as entrepreneurs. The next problem is actually attaining it. If left to our own devices, if just doing our own thing every day, we're relied upon to keep ourselves accountable or to set up some other system. And the beginning of that is this thing of willpower, right? I want to run this scenario by you that really most of us working for ourselves will have encountered. It's the one where you're having a bit of a slow day. You know that you've got this thing and that other thing that really have to get done. But the clock is ticking, your motivation's low, it's just really not going the way it's supposed to be going. And you're there pushing yourself, you're there like, come on, I've got to get this done. And you're simultaneously feeling the pressure of time, but feeling a decreasing sort of a capacity to be able to do the things that need to be done. So you're going to whatever sources you have, maybe you turn on some like pumping up music, slap your face, you do whatever you have to do. I mean, like, we've all been there. You've talked about the risks of this kind of willpower depletion in this situation. So maybe you can start by telling us about that and what's really going on in that scenario.
Yeah, so this is something that's really interesting that we've kind of figured out through science in the last maybe 20 years. There's been, and I get to study all of this as a part of my job that sort of makes me gives me the leverage to dig into the stuff that I'm really curious about, but it, you know, it also informs a lot of the work I do. There's been some research that's been done into this idea of willpower as a finite and replenishing resource that we have. And, you know, I won't get into the kind of ins and outs of all the different studies that have kind of proven this, but the leading, I guess, metaphor for explaining how the complex neurological and neurochemical dynamic and psychological dynamic all combined to give us kind of the mojo, the mental juice to make stuff happen, to do difficult work and to focus ourselves. You know, the way that they describe all of that is kind of as a mental gas tank. And there's all kinds of research that validates this metaphor and says, yes, in fact, it is like this. And so it's a gas tank of kind of energy, of mental gasoline that we spend in various different ways throughout the day when we focus and apply ourselves particularly to the task at hand. And so this kind of depletion, sort of cognitive depletion or depletion of mental energy, happens when we engage our willpower. And there's a couple of common ways which we start to deplete the tank. One of them is just focusing. So actually trying to eliminate distractions. Like if you're working in a noisy, distracting environment where there's sort of things about the environment that are reaching out into your consciousness and kind of pulling you away from the task, but you're really trying to do that bit of work, you're trying to write that thing on your computer or whatever it is, you'll be spending this kind of precious mental energy that'll just be sucking away, dropping down, down, down through the tank as you try to focus. There's a couple of other things. The famous one that I think a lot of entrepreneurs have heard about is decision fatigue, which is another way that that mental gas tank of kind of willpower energy gets depleted. So decision fatigue is the idea that when we make a lot of tough decisions, that takes away big chunks of gas, of that mental gas, but little decisions do the same thing just in a smaller way as well. So making hundreds of little choices about, you know, what to do in life or even what to have for lunch, what to wear in the morning, all of that stuff can really start to add up and mentally deplete you. And the upshot of all of this is that you get to the end of the day where basically your mental capacity for self-regulation is really depleted. And so what that means is that when people lose that mental gas tank, we tend to revert to our more baser instincts, which are to, you know, to just kind of move down Maslow's hierarchy of needs in terms of what we're focusing on and want to just feel safe, put some food in our faces probably, and pretty much just chill out and be a couch potato. And so when we get to the end of our mental gas tank for the day, there's really only two things that replenish it. One is food, and it doesn't do that great a job, but it certainly will replenish it. If you don't eat all day, your mental kind of capacity for applying willpower to these different things will be severely depleted, and eating kind of brings it back up again. But the biggest one is sleep. Like a full cycle, 8 hours, 7 or 8 hours of REM sleep is really the only thing that refreshes us and gives us that mental kind of gas tank filled up again.
So why does this seem to happen on some days and not others? You know, conversely, everybody's had the feeling of, you know, you sit down at the computer to get the things done that you have to do. You're really kind of excited about it. You're pumped to complete the things that you have to complete. And maybe you do a couple hours, a few hours, and you don't seem, and there is no feeling of fatigue. It doesn't get taxing. You don't get to that point where you feel like you have to, come on, I've got to get through this. I just want to finish this. You don't have to kind of activate willpower. What's the difference between those two scenarios?
Yeah, I think that there's a kind of a mania that people can get into that some people call like a flow state, where they get really focused on a particular task at hand, and there's something else that kicks in where they're just sort of in the zone. The thing with that, and there's sort of a very strict set of constraints around that, you tend to have to be really focused on the one task and have enough of that task that it's going to occupy you for a really long time. So actually the people who I see this happen to the most to are often like software engineers or technical entrepreneurs who can dig into coding or something like that, which is a task that often requires several days worth of kind of staring at a computer and grinding it out on the keyboard. And so it's very easy to get into this almost trance-like state. If you've ever seen a kid playing with Lego, it's kind of fun. It's actually a very kind of similar dynamic to what happens when a business owner gets into that state on a particular task. And it's very powerful so long as that task is a high leverage thing that's really moving the dial forward in your business. The danger for a lot of entrepreneurs is that some of those things are things they'd be better off outsourcing or delegating in some way, shape, or form. And I know plenty of kind of technical entrepreneurs who have problems growing their business because they can't get away from the endlessly satisfying kind of Lego building game of like writing their own code or whatever it may be.
So that's when a nasty, you see a little paradox there, isn't it? Where there might be the kind of task that really gets you into a flow state, so that when you're doing it, you're feeling like, I'm really accomplishing a lot. I've logged a lot of hours today. I really got some things done, but zoomed back just a little bit, that is not necessarily the thing that you should be doing. That's not necessarily the thing that should have taken your time or the thing that is going to grow your business.
that's, and yeah, and that's the thing, is that the psychological conditions that tend to put people in those flow states are very precise, like I said. And one of the other things is that one of the other conditions is that it tends to have to be something that's well within your comfort zone, that you're actually incredibly, you know, kind of comfortable and feeling good about doing. So it tends to be very uncourageous work. So when I say it's like the software, you know, engineer, the computer programmer who's just like working on coding out his website and getting it just right, there's a lot of perfectionistic loops that help keep them in the zone. It's kind of that feeling that you might get when you're working on a puzzle, like a 10,000 piece puzzle, or playing with Legos, like seeing a kid do that and they're like 90% done but not quite there, and then they just can't leave it alone because they're almost finished. They've got to close the loop. Mm. And, you know, parents will know that you can have the most hyperactive, like sugar crazed child. If they're into Lego and you put that set in front of them, they're just going to sit and focus like blinders on, you know, like all they can see is the Lego set. You'll forget they exist for like 3 or 4 hours while they do that. And look, it's great when, in you know, once in a blue moon, that particular task for you as a business owner lines up with the absolute highest leverage thing that you should be working on. Then, you know, it's where it's a perfect example of working on your business, not in it. It's a perfect example of taking action that results in exponential results. But so often, you know, that's not actually the case. I mean, you know, in my business career as the Shrink for Entrepreneurs, my first sort of digital business, I was a blogger, and one of the highest leverage things I could do was write new content, which was uncomfortable, difficult work. There was, you know, a lot of psychology I had to wrestle with. It was always hard, but I remember I knew enough PHP to just be dangerous. I knew enough code knowledge about my own website to just be dangerous. And when there was something on my site I didn't like, I'd sometimes jump in and think, oh, I'll just take 10 minutes to see if I can fix this little image or the way it's displaying. And then I'd look up, 2 hours would have gone by and I still hadn't quite gotten it perfectly, or I had fixed it, but that had introduced another issue. And suddenly I was like, wait, I have a contractor who works for me who does this stuff. Why aren't I just asking them to do this? Hmm. And they'd do what it took me 2 hours in like less than 2 minutes, because that's how big the knowledge gap is with that kind of stuff. But I think it's so seductive to get pulled into those activities sometimes, because in those 2 hours, I felt I could tell myself a story. I'm busy. I'm working on something that matters and is important and is an integral part of my business. And, you know, that's a really subtle and insidious form of self-sabotage and self-deception, because, you know, really I should be working, and we should all be working on the highest leverage thing possible, right? On the stuff that really moves us forward.
Yeah, and this is so important. It's only hitting me now as we discuss it. But what this means is if you are constantly in a state of flow, if you do not experience any difficulties with mustering willpower, it may mean that you aren't doing the right tasks in your business. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. Like I said at the start of our chat today, there is no significant business that has enriched the person who started it and done really well over a lasting period of time that wasn't created without significant discomfort and courageous action on behalf of the entrepreneur behind it. Mm. It just doesn't happen.
We all need to get used to that grind a little bit. The grind's not going away. The difficult days aren't going away. We just need a better system of management.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And I wouldn't even say it's a grind. I think that in a weird way, sometimes that work, like that sort of like Lego building, puzzle completing, coding or whatever, can sometimes feel like a grind. But oftentimes it's the uncertain kind of scary work, the work that requires courage, that isn't really a grind and can sometimes happen very quickly if we just actually finally act on it. You know, for a lot of entrepreneurs, it's like picking up the phone and making that sales call, or like finally reaching out and emailing that person you've been meaning to. Or, I mean, there's so many definitions of what that work is. But the great news, the good news, because I don't want to be all doom and gloom, is that sometimes when you can use willpower and push yourself to act on that high leverage thing, it's so much easier on the other side. As soon as it's done, you're like, oh, what a relief. And you've made this leap and stride forward that, you know, is almost the opposite of a grind.
And I bet a lot of great feelings come from that. Maybe it's a sense of pride at the accomplishment that you made, a sense of having done something you didn't think that was possible for you. That's got to feel pretty good.
Yeah, and often it's just hardcore results. You know, like if I think back, and I'm sure you're the same, over my career and some of the things that have had my businesses like leap forward, skyrocket forward. Like sometimes there's been times where it's like, yeah, I grounded out for like 6 weeks. I worked on this project and it worked out really well. But sometimes it's like these tiny little moments where I kind of had the courage to push forward on doing something I knew I should, and I finally did it, and it just worked out and everything took off. You know, there's been lots of little examples along the years of things that in hindsight weren't that difficult, but before I did them felt almost impossible. And that's what willpower is for. That's what, you know, accountability is for, is to push us to do these things that really make a difference.
Right. And that kind of brings us back around to the accountability point now, because it seems to me, like if I imagine the kind of entrepreneurs that you talk about, the ones that have these strong systems of accountability, is it fair to say that they don't grapple with these issues either of mustering willpower or of focusing on the properly leveraged tasks to the same degree, because there is an external influence rather than just the churnings of their own minds?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is one of the areas where like the, you know, willpower and accountability kind of overlap in terms of their effects on one another. Like I think that a lot of business owners have this epic battle that they engage in, the sort of struggle to be focused and to be productive. And there's a huge number of things that people do to go down that path, right? Like they download software to kind of organize all their to-dos, or they create elaborate whiteboards with like game plans. They build mind maps. They sort of make lists. You know, they like, we have all of this kind of, it's almost meta work. It's not actually doing work. It's working on working. It's like thinking about working. And the crazy thing about that stuff is that all of that actually depletes our willpower as well.
Interesting.
That you can mentally wear yourself out by, you know, that intuitive thing. And I've seen so many business owners do this with like, you know, a lot of big intentions, a lot of big plans. They wake up on Monday morning and think, right, they rub their hands together. Here I go. I'm going to sit down and make a real good plan. And they take a couple of hours in the morning, which is, by the way, prime, full mental gas tank of willpower time to do the really important work. They take a couple of hours to build this elaborate plan and make a lot of decisions and prioritize a lot of things. And they second guess themselves and they rethink it and they go around in a few mental loops. And then they finally go, all right, that's the plan. I'm ready to start. Oh, it's lunchtime. And, you know, and by the time they come back from lunch, their willpower is severely depleted and the best part of the day is kind of gone. And, you know, this is a cycle that people can really get into. So, you know, that's actually something I see a lot, is that the container people try to build psychologically around their work can actually be counterproductive to what they're trying to get done, because it drains their willpower so much to be trying to figure all of this stuff out on their own.
Hmm. Okay, so let's talk specifically about accountability for people. Now, obviously, you have a service that's geared towards helping people attain greater accountability in their work as entrepreneurs. If people don't have coaches like that, if people don't have access to that kind of thing, what other stuff can be done to increase one's level of accountability in day-to-day life?
Yeah, I mean, we actually recommend even to our customers at Commit Action that they should stack as many layers of accountability and as they can in their life. And so this is true for every business owner. I mean, we like to recommend that people find other people in their lives, you know, professionally, personally, who they can connect it with and who can stay kind of plugged in into what it is that they're working on. And so I think the simplest version of this is just the informal mastermind, you know, the kind of casual meetup with a few friends who are in a similar industry or even not, where you just talk about what it is that you're kind of committing to doing. And you bounce off of those, you know, those other people, the plans that you're making. And a big part of this is that they can shortcut that second guessing, the over analysis, and say, right, that's the plan, go do it. Let's talk next week. You know what I mean? Or like, let's catch up next month or next quarter. You know, the more formal version of that looks like, and I've often told clients of mine, you know, even if your company is not a startup with investors and it's just a solopreneurial thing, pretend as though it's something more. You want to achieve big business results. Start acting like you have a big business. Build a advisory board. You know, anyone can form and convene a board for their business. You don't actually have to have a startup and have fancy venture capital investors to do so. You can get your significant other, you can get your mother-in-law, who's an amazing person to have on the board because they ask all sorts of uncomfortable questions. You know, you can get your neighbor, you can get your you know, whoever it might be, and say, hey, all I want you guys to do is jump on a conference call once a quarter, and I'm going to tell you about how the business did and what the plan is and when what we're going to do in the next quarter to make a difference. And it'll change everything for you. The right now, as I say this, I know that dozens, hundreds, I don't know how many thousands of your listeners are having like shudders and tremors, terrifying feelings running up and down their spine at the thought of doing this. But the thing is that psychologically, this will transform the kind of person that you are. Like, that this will transform the kind of results that you produce, because all of a sudden you will be out, you will free yourself from these insane mental games that solopreneurs, like very small business owners, play with themselves, where they've got like a inner critic, an inner cheerleader, an inner accountability coach who one minute is saying, you did great this morning, take an early lunch break, just chill out. And then later that afternoon is like, this day was a disaster. You're worthless. What were you thinking? You know what I mean? Like, yeah. There's so much craziness that goes on inside of people's heads. And, you know, if you want to start taking advantage of accountability, you really just have to connect. And I would say that, you know, if there's one thing that I'd like listeners from this podcast episode to take away, it's the idea that, in fact, and this is something we haven't even spoken about yet, I think isolation is the major social pathology for entrepreneurs in 2017. Isolation is the root cause of the biggest problems that we face. And we're so blind to it because we're so connected. We're so plugged in by technology, the same technology that empowers us to build these incredible businesses. But what you've got to ask yourself is there any human being on this whole planet who knows whether yesterday I kicked ass in business and on the things I know I should, versus just phoning it in, versus having a lazy day where I barely did anything? Is there anyone who actually knows which of those two scenarios you lived yesterday? And if the answer is no one, then you're squarely in that problem of isolation. And if you're not getting the results that you want, isolation is the reason.
I want to ask you a couple of things about having a mastermind, or even something as informal as a coffee group. A lot of people have heard this idea, but I also think a lot of people don't really know how it should work, some of the mechanics of it. So let me ask about specifics. Is it better if you're trying to get together with a group of people? It sounds like face to face is better. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I mean, I think face to face is better, but I'll take what I can get. Like, I think that, you know, if you can connect with people via Skype, so long as there's, or, you know, whatever it may be, so long as there's intentionality and commitment behind that, and it's a regular thing, and you're not sort of abusing the ease of the technology, then it works. I think that the format, I'm more format agnostic, but I'm very certain about the kind of the intention that needs to be behind it.
Okay, so format agnostic. What about the people that are there? Is it more important to have it be people who you have stronger relationships with, so you can trust them or confide in them more easily? Or is it better to have people who are more closely related in terms of the work that they do? For example, they're working on a similar business model, they're from a similar industry, and so on.
Yeah, I think that if you can, again, like the message I want to have is, to be clear, is that any accountability is better than none. But I think that if you can choose, it's probably better to get the accountability from people who know what it's like to go pro. And what I mean by that is that this isn't a hobby for them, that they're committed to producing the same kind of results that you're producing. So, you know, I think that you could have somebody who's in a different industry, but are they showing up and working on their business in a way that you admire, in a way that you would like to be showing up and working on yours, right? Like, it's kind of, you know, like, it's kind of the jogging buddy principle. You don't want to have a jogging buddy who leaves you in the dust, and you don't want to be the jogging buddy to someone who you're leaving in the dust. You want to have somebody who kind of, you know, shows up and commits in that way. And I think that that is, you know, the challenge for some people who have built, who are building businesses in a state of sort of cultural isolation, where they don't know too many people in their lives, in their personal lives, who actually get what they're doing. And we hear this from our customers all the time, that they live in a place where no one else gets it, where their friends, where their neighbor, where the person across the street is like, they don't, they just totally don't understand this entrepreneurship thing, this self-employment thing.
I've heard that a lot too.
Yeah. And so I think for those people, you know, really seeking out that community online is sometimes a must. So.
Okay. I've heard people express that challenge too, where they're like, I don't want to just sit down with another bunch of people like me who are just getting started, who don't, who are struggling with this, who don't know what they're doing. But I think what you're saying is, if it's a choice of sitting down with a group of people who also are like trying to improve their productivity, they may be about where you are, that's still much better than having no one, no accountability.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It's better. And I think that I think the thing is, and this is what everyone who's listening can seek to do, is try to build a group of people who are persuaded, who are indoctrinated into the idea that execution is everything that matters, you know, that who understand that the game of accountability is what you are there to do. I think where I've seen these kinds of masterminds go wrong is that a bunch of, you know, beginner aspiring entrepreneurs get together and they decide to have a coffee group or a Skype meeting once a month or something like that. And they think that they're there to discuss business strategy.
Yeah.
In the beginning, just discuss doing stuff, you know, like in the beginning, just focus on execution, because no one in the group has the experience, you know, the hard earned kind of market experience to really be providing really great advice. And things will get weird if people start giving advice and other people start listening to it and acting on it. The thing is that you, and this is another something that's kind of central to my belief system and everything that I do with Commit Action and with my whole career. I believe that entrepreneurs, for the most part, 99.9% of the time, know precisely what it is that they need to be doing next, deep down and in their bones. Even if what they know is that they have to go to a certain place to learn how to do what's next, which is sometimes the case, and which is why there's amazing resources and tools and education programs and cool stuff like that out there. But I do believe that we know what we should be doing. So if you're going to seek out accountability, you're going to try and build this in your life, which I heartily recommend, make it about the execution, make it accountability about that, because that's the magic part. That's what's missing. You don't need more ideas about what you should do next. I suspect that you, listening to this, already have enough of all of that. You just need to go and do what you know you should.
Okay, so we're getting really specific now. This is cool. So don't do advice. Do tell people, this is what I've accomplished, this is what I've actually executed on, and this is what I'm planning to execute next. Then how regularly do you have to meet with this group of people? That's another thing people say. We're entrepreneurs. We're always trying to do more things than we actually have time for. There's no way I could sit down every week with somebody, probably not even every fortnight. How regularly does this have to happen for it to be worthwhile?
Oh man, I mean, we're sort of straying into what we do here at Commit Action. I mean, the way that we approach this is that we think that we believe that a really kind of powerful and succinct session to focus on the next 7 days ahead is like a really powerful ritual that entrepreneurs should seek to build in their lives. And that's what we do. That's what we create. And we think that's a really clear path to like this high leverage success that we're talking about. But I think that you should take what you can get. If accountability is a really big problem for you, you know, meeting once a month, meeting, I would say once a quarter is the absolute outside. I mean, keep in mind that most really successful companies have the majority of their their accountability delivered to the founder and the CEO and the executive team once a quarter in the form of a shareholder meeting, like a board meeting of some kind. And so I think that that's the minimum, but I think that you know, if you're really looking to outsource your battle for focus and productivity, what we do, like the pinnacle of that is the weekly 7-day sprint, getting accountable, getting clarity on exactly what you're going to be taking action on over the next week, so that you're at a place where you're never sitting down at your desk wondering, where do I begin? What do I do next? You're always, if anyone was to stop you in the street at any point and say, what are you working on right now? You'd have a totally clear answer that was just like right there. And that's a level of clarity that, frankly, very few entrepreneurs naturally have. And it's definitely something to strive for.
Sure. Well, this is great. Now, nobody listening has any excuse not to be able to go out and do this now. Everybody, almost everybody, is in one of my Facebook groups. So you've got people who you will be in close contact with who are doing similar work, who some of them will be above your level of progress, some of them will be below. Peter says that you want to get together with them. Is there a number of people? What's good, like 5 people or 3 people minimum? Doesn't matter.
Yeah, I think that 3 people is the minimum. The reason is that that the jogging buddy concept is a real kind of struggle and it often fails. You know, the 2-person jogging buddy relationship is fantastic until the day that one or both of you are hungover, and then it falls apart. The thing about adding people is that it's just increasing the power of the accountability kind of insurance, that when there's 3 people, the chances of all 3 of them being unavailable for some reason is pretty minimal. And so, you know, that one guy is going to show up and be like, where were you guys? You know, come on, like, let's do this. And that's the magic, you know, that's what makes it really work.
Got it. So it's minimum 3 people. You've got the relevance of the people and the quality of them and the proximity of them already baked in because they're a member of one of these groups. You're going to try to meet as regularly as you can all manage it, but for a short session. And you're going to talk about only, no one's giving advice. You're just going to talk about, here's what I did this week. Here's what I'm going to do next week. Which
execution is everything.
Execution is everything. Which, interestingly, I bet when that happens, a sort of advice will come from it because you'll say, oh, that's interesting what that person's doing for their business this week. I wonder if that's an avenue for me to explore. I wonder if that makes sense in my business.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is the thing about this kind of, and this is the only solution when it comes to focus and productivity and effectiveness that has this effect. It gets better over time. You can download the most expensive, like $99 like app for your phone that's the coolest looking task to-do list thing, it'll, after 2 weeks, it'll totally fade away and you'll, like, it'll be a real drag to use it. You can read best-selling books about productivity hacks from, like, psychology researchers or totally unqualified but charismatic gurus. Either one will get you pumped up. 2 weeks later, it'll totally fade away. But when you do this accountability thing, something extraordinary happens. It gets better over time. Because you commit to taking action, you come back to the group and tell them how you did, and then you do it again, and then you do it again, and suddenly you start to realize, hey, this one thing is working really well. Oh, hey, this one other thing I've been executing on isn't working that well. Let's change it up. Let's try something different. And so you start to be the kind of entrepreneur that everybody reads about, which is the kind of entrepreneur who gets street smarts through experience. And it's the best kind of learning. It's the insights that come from playing the game of business that your parents can't teach you, that school can't teach you. You know, that frankly, it's debatable that anyone or anything can teach you, but you get that stuff coming at you hard and fast because, I hate to be kind of cheesy and cliched and quoting myself here, but execution, relentless and patient execution is everything.
While you were saying that, I've just turned that into a picture quote with a mountain scenery in the background.
Awesome. Slap that up on Instagram.
I'll tag you. Okay, that's really cool. I'm psyched that we kind of got to an end point with the accountability issue. I think there's a lot for people to take away on that. I wanted to move to our second big topic for the chat, which was goal setting. So I think you and I have never fully delved into this subject, but to give you a 5-second background for me, I'm someone who started out in business and just adult life with this really fervent belief in goal setting. I was all like 100% Tony Robbins, let's get stuff done. But as I sit here today, my understanding is that the science on goal setting, the current research is far from settled, very mixed. I'm hoping you'll be able to shed some light. But really, maybe I can start with the point that's most closely related to accountability and ask you, should you tell people about goals that you set? Is that going to help you or hinder?
Yeah, and that's an interesting question because that's exactly what accountability is in like a fundamental way, right? Like it's somebody who knows what you're supposed to be doing and is holding you accountable to show up and be the best version of yourself and actually do it. And so you have to tell them what you're doing, right? Like that information has to come from you. And that's, you know, an important distinction. You're not looking to for people to tell you what to do. You're looking for people to hold space and listen. And as you tell them what you're going to do. And so I agree with you and I about this goal setting thing. And it's something I follow all the research in this kind of psychology of productivity space very carefully. And I too was a big goal setter. There's been this kind of pendulum swing back away from that. And the research around this stuff is kind of mixed in terms of whether or not it actually makes a difference. The place that I've kind of landed on it is that I think that the criticisms, the scientific criticism of goal setting is particularly centered around long-term goal setting. The idea that stuff changes quite a lot and that we live in a reasonably chaotic world. And as much as entrepreneurs want to believe they're the center of the universe and everything that they, you know, that happens to them as a result of their kind of conscious will being exerted on the world, it's not always the case. Stuff gets weird and strange stuff sometimes happens. So I think that where I see small business owners going wrong with goal setting is really focusing on the huge, big picture, long-term goals, the 5-year plans, and even to some extent, the 1-year plans, depending on how much momentum you've got going on and how kind of established you are in your business. I think that it makes a lot more, because there's some caveats to this that sort of prove the rule, some exceptions that prove the rule, and we can discuss those. But I think that focusing your goal setting on the short-term future where you can accurately predict probably with a high degree of probability what's going to happen, you know, where you're pretty confident of how things are going to go down, that's the part of goal setting that works really, really well. And and the longer you push your plans out, the more kind of insubstantial they become. And certainly some of the research tells us that those really big long-term goals don't necessarily make a huge difference when it comes to sort of magically inspiring a higher level of success that would otherwise have been there. So I think, and I'm kind of rambling here, but in very simple terms, I think that having a clear idea of what you're going to execute on the next maybe 7 days or the next month and having accountability around that is a phenomenal effectiveness hack, has extraordinary results. I think that painstakingly constructing a vision of exactly where you're going to be in 5 years' time is one of the biggest kind of most self-sabotaging waste of time things that you can do. And the one, I'll let you jump in here, but the one kind of exception to this rule is, you know, in big business corporations like Apple Computers, or I don't think they're just Apple now, they have a 5-year plan. Part of the reason for that is that they've been around for much longer than 5 years. And so what they do is not so much goal setting as forecasting. And we should all aspire, every entrepreneur should hope to be in the place one day where they can do smart, savvy forecasting, where they're looking at past performance to predict future growth. And that's important and cool, but it's not the same thing as long-term goal setting, and I think people kind of get confused about them.
I'm sorry, I lost track there. I was just ripping down my vision board, and the thing that I took from that was, I mean, like, taking away long-term goal setting is something I'm really on board with, and it's something I've experienced the importance of in my own life. So I definitely get that. What is the thing that, or is there anything that can replace goal setting or setting up some big final outcome for the sake of maintaining a certain motivation. Nobody likes to be feeling like they're not going to any particular place, and a lot of people in particular struggle if they feel like they can't see very far into what's coming next. Is there an alternative? Is there a way to avoid long-term goal setting but still be setting up something for the future that's the accumulation of the day-to-day tasks that you do?
I think that thinking about who you really want to be is important. You know, I think that thinking about the kind of the life that you want to live, the sort of container around things that you're sort of building for yourself is a way to kind of avoid setting long-term goals. And I think this is why the research of this is so confusing, and because it does sort of boil down to semantics in some respect. You know, if you're saying I want to have my goal is to own a Ferrari in 5 years, that's probably just about the worst example of a long-term goal. The reason is, and there's some kind of really interesting philosophy on this, is that you are not really the same person as the person who exists in 5 years, who has the same name and shares a bunch of the same body cells as you, yep, you know, or a few of them at least, who will then go and buy that Ferrari. And what if he changes his mind? There's certainly been a lot of 22-year-old entrepreneurs who have set a 5-year Ferrari goal and who have arrived at the tender age of, you know, 26 and a half or whatever, and gone, that's not really, like, they've developed the maturity or the wisdom or whatever to go, that's not really what I want right now. There's something else that's more important to me. And so I think in that, like, really basic sense, we should just throw away that goal setting altogether, right? Like, well, let's just not set those kind of goals. And it's funny that you joke about tearing down the vision board, but that is exactly the type of stuff that people put on their vision board. Like, it's a very material set of goal setting. When you build a vision board, it's literally things that you can find pictures of that exist in some substantial way. And so, you know, long term, you may realize that those things are not actually what it's all about. And I think where vision boards really go wrong is that you can actually sometimes have those things, you can get shortcuts to those things without having, and again, quoting myself here, just hammering this message, without having the leverage that the things represent. And so I would argue that that 22-year-old who says, I want to have a Ferrari in 5 years, doesn't really want a Ferrari in 5 years, although it would be pretty cool. What that 22-year-old is saying is, I want to be the kind of entrepreneur who has a Ferrari in 5 years. And when he gets there, if he's achieved the goal, what he's actually become is this high leverage person who, if he wanted it, could have a Ferrari. You know, if that was really what mattered. But actually what matters is that he can travel the world and work from any time zone on the planet and only have to work a handful of hours a day to check off the high leverage stuff before going and doing what he loves, that has time to read a book or two a week if that's what he wants to do. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
That's what that thing represents. And so, you know, I think that when we start thinking about the kind of life we want to live and really who we want to become, a weird thing happens where all of that starts to suddenly seem much more within reach. We may even have the positive realization and sort of reframe that we already have a lot of it now that may actually make us more present and happy. And we can kind of focus on what we want to emphasize and double down on and, you know, and kind of focus on having more of, which in a way is a goal, but it's not attached to a 5-year plan or a 6-month project plan or a 12-month set of, you know, expectations. It's just kind of this general sense of I want to move my life in this direction. And surely, I don't know about the research, but I'm pretty confident that, you know, these clever academic researchers in psychology and neuroscience wouldn't say that there's anything wrong with having intention.
I sometimes wish we disagreed more to make our conversations more interesting, but I'm going to instead say something I know you're going to really like. I was listening to an interview with this cognitive behavioral therapist recently, and he was talking about the difference between setting goals and essentially trying to uphold values. And he said, so rather than imagining I would like to be intelligent, as though that is some static point in the future at which you might arrive, you say, I would like to uphold the value of intelligence, meaning that at any point from now until the end of my life, if I am doing X particular thing, then I am like upholding the value of intelligence. I'm being intelligent. It's an active thing rather than a passive state of having arrived at the thing. And in that way, whether it's, if you're an entrepreneur, whether it's freedom, let's say, or effectiveness, or any of the things that you might be aspiring to as goals in the future, they can be brought into the now with this acknowledgement that that is the direction that you're moving. That's the value that you're upholding. And as soon as you do that, you can access those feelings immediately rather than pushing them off into the future.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, yeah, totally. It's a, you gave me a softball there of something I love. I totally agree with that idea. And I think that that's the thing, is that it puts you on this kind of spectrum that you're already on. And you might be seeking to maximize that thing and do more and more of it, but it's a journey. It's not like it's a journey. It's a path that you're already on, which is very different from the discrete goal of owning a Ferrari or having $1 million to your name, you know, or whatever it may be, right? Where there's this kind of finite day where you accomplish it or you didn't. And so, you know, living with, I would argue that when you frame the kind of objective of most entrepreneurs in that way and think about like that idea of freedom, it's really difficult to have freedom as a value. This is my favorite hobby, is to kind of poke holes in the idea of freedom for entrepreneurs. It's difficult to think of freedom as a value that you live with every day, because what does that mean? Like every day you're waking up and being like, let me unshackle myself from these constraints and bonds. And like, you could do that on day one. You might quit your job and break up with your significant other. That could be interesting. But what are you going to do on day two? Like, how much freedom can you live with? You know? Yeah. And so suddenly you realize this objective for what it really is, which is kind of an empty and meaningless word, which is only defined by the negation of itself, right? That you can't have freedom without constraint, without bonds, without trapped. And so then I think that if we decide to organize ourselves this way, we come back to this idea of like, what am I really after here? And I think that being this, you know, being this high leverage person, being able to have that as a value, to be leveraged in everything that you do, is that sounds like a really cool goal to me.
Yeah, I like it. You kind of skipped ahead in the flow of my own thoughts on goal setting, and we ended up talking about the big versus small goals issue. I wonder if I can to bring you back to the previous question, which was around the validity of talking about the goals to people. Let's say people are going out now and starting these mastermind groups, and somebody has in their head a goal, or at least a general direction that they want to accomplish X with this website within X amount of time.
Oh yeah, I know where you're headed.
Yeah, should they tell the accountability partner about that? Is that going to make them feel more pressure and zap their motivation, or is that going to make them feel as though they have to do it because now they've told somebody about it?
So the psychology is so slippery and sneaky here, and it's actually a little different even from what you're saying. There is an argument to be made, and I actually wrote an article on my blog about this years and years ago that I believe the title was Why You Shouldn't Tell People Your Goals. So I got a cop to that. The reason that you shouldn't tell people your goals, like I want to have a Ferrari or whatever it may be, is that we human beings have a weird habit of doing that in such a way that gives them this phenomenal positive experience. There's a literal dopamine release, serotonin, all sorts of happy chemicals flood the brain. And you actually get a little experience of what it is to achieve the goal, or what your brain thinks it will be to achieve that goal, right then and there in the present when you tell someone that that is in fact what you're after. So it's incredibly kind of fulfilling and rewarding to do that. The problem with that is that it actually takes away the tension that you were going to use to create it, to create that. You're having the psychological reward without actually accomplishing what it is that you're after. And so there's a very simple principle that you can use here that ties in nicely with what we talked about with accountability, which is simply tell people about the mundane, uncomfortable execution-based goals that aren't all that much fun to think about and kind of sound like a lot of hard work, because that's the goals that you need to have accountability around. those are the goals that, and they tend to be short term, which ties in with that, this idea of like, yeah, like having goals over the next week or month is probably a good thing. Those are the goals where you need that kind of support system in place, and where sharing them isn't going to give you this kind of psychological, you know, positive emotion release that leaves you actually not all that hungry to go and take action and do the thing. So, you know, what we'll see, I see this a lot. I live in New York City. There's a lot of startup entrepreneurs here, and I'll often be just even sitting at a bar. There's so many of them in my neighborhood. And I'll be hearing two young people talking about the startup ideas that they have and what they're hoping to build. And they're absolutely giddy about it. They're talking about these big picture goals, these huge, like, years long execution plans. And they're sharing the stuff over a drink with a trusted friend and just feeling so great about it, fulfilling the sense of self-importance, you know, stroking their own egos. And when they walk away, I can guarantee that they leave that conversation feeling fantastic and completely, utterly unmotivated. And it's because all of that energy has just been dissipated.
Do you ever go over and hand out a business card in that situation?
Some people are beyond help, so I don't bother. I sit there and smile and shut up.
I love it. But that is a cool tie-in with the mastermind idea. So we're already trying to avoid talking about much more with our mastermind and accountability partners than the things that we're already getting done. Here you seem to be saying, if you are extending it out and telling people things or something about what you're looking to accomplish, keep it also in the short term and keep it also in the realm of the practical and maybe even the difficult thing that you already have on your to-do list.
Yeah, the way that our coaching team at Commit Action literally phrases it is that we ask people about their commitments for the next 7 days. We know that language, we know the psychological power of language is significant, not to be messed with. So we ask people for their commitments, because that's a way of having me tell you having you tell me what your goal is, but in a non-giddy way, in a way where you understand what it is that you're saying and what that actually means to commit to something. And so that's the way that I suggest that, you know, if you want to share your goals with people, train yourself to share your commitments, because then you're actually going to, right away, it's going to be much more uncomfortable and you're not going to want to do it as much, which should tell you something about what it is to tell everybody about your goals. But number two, if you do manage to spit it out and get your commitments out there publicly and heard by people who matter, the side effects of breaking down a barrier toward mental entrepreneurial isolation will immediately begin to be felt, and you'll become, you know, a more effective version of yourself.
That makes a lot of sense. Peter, we've come to the end of the things that I restricted myself to only asking you on this call. And it feels crazy now that, I mean, well, we did a podcast a long time ago. We did this webinar more recently, but now we've clocked, I don't know, in total 4 hours or something of delving into this problem of the mental difficulties of entrepreneurial life. I'm sure you agree. I feel like we've just scratched the surface.
Yeah, man, let's do this again next week. Like, there's so much more to discuss, but I agree. I mean, this is a lot of the kind of highest kind of functioning stuff, I think, relates to the way that people think about their intentions, think about their goals in terms of what they're going to do. So there's a lot more to talk about, but these are some good questions, and I think we've covered some good ground today.
Yeah, and in terms of Commit Action itself, I know I got some nice emails from people about from the last group of people who joined you after that webinar we did. A lot of people already sort of feeling that boost in their mentality, that boost in their productivity, having gotten an accountability system of their own now. How's it looking at your end? Are people doing the things they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, so I get a weekly report on how all of these business owners and entrepreneurs are doing, and we've seen some really extraordinary stuff. I think that the folks who have, you know, from your community who have come along and joined us, other people who, you know, who already had an inkling or suspected that execution is the name of the game, that that's all that matters, and I think that they have probably in the first few weeks just felt this incredible relief of like the second guessing is gone, the struggling to get organized, to kind of build their own game plans and prioritize what they're going to do has all been outsourced to the pros, to us. That whole battle for focus on productivity has been, you know, taken care of. That the willpower that people normally spend trying to do all of that, you know, has suddenly been given back to them so that they can actually work on what matters. And so, yeah, we've heard this, we've heard from most people that, you know, they felt relieved and that they can just kind of dig in and do the work that counts. So, so far it's really positive. Yeah.
You were telling me before we hit record today about how there's a lot of members of Commit Action who've been using, you guys for years now, and they sort of view what you do as having this executive aid kind of thing, something like a senator or a CEO. There's your team functions for them like this person who is constantly there. They're kind of like, what's the best way to put that?
Yeah, I mean, it's like the our customers, our long-term customers feel as though there's a place, and some of them don't have a team, it's just them, or they have one or two contractors or a couple of people who work for them or something like that, but they feel as though their Commit Action coach is kind of their right hand, this executive aide, I think is a good word, but who's just dedicatedly focused on their effectiveness. And that's really what it's all about, is that, you know, being a Commit Action member gives you access to an extraordinarily talented, software enhanced kind of planning concierge who's an accountability coach, who's a productivity personal trainer. And their whole job, all they're there to do is to just turn you into this powerhouse of execution so that you can get done the things that you know that you should. Yeah, so there's nothing else really like it, but that's what it's all about.
I imagine something like a bodyguard for the mind. There's like this big dude like following you around, making sure that mentally nothing fucks with you.
Well, that's, you know, one of the things that we that's a great metaphor. We should play with that now, marketing, for sure. One of the things that I think really resonate with our long-term members, it's an experience that they actually described to me. I never thought about this before until they told me, was that the thing about Commit Action is that motivation and focus and productivity kind of show up like they have an appointment, because you're working with this, you're leveraging this dedicated sort of accountability coach. They literally do have an appointment. You just have to show up. Right? Like, it's just something that's kind of baked into your schedule. And that's really the kind of reason I built the company. It's what we're all about, is the idea that the entrepreneurs we look up to, the Mark Zuckerbergs, the Bill Gates and Bransons and whatnot of the world, they all have this because of the structure of the teams and organizations they've built around them, so that they just wake up and show up, and the thing that they've built, the system, demands that they be the best version of themselves. So in that sense, they're very highly leveraged all the time. For a small business owner, for someone who's basically just going at it on their laptop all on their own, what we do at Commit Action is a way that is give a way that you can just show up to, that you don't have to be your own source of motivation and your own source of focus and your own kind of inner coach and person who yells at yourself and tracks how you're doing and all that kind of stuff, that you don't have to do it alone.
Yeah, it's really cool. It's a great service. Peter, I'm going to let you go. It's a Sunday night. You definitely shouldn't still be on the computer now, but I really appreciate your time, and I'm sure the people listening will too.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm always happy to clear a Sunday evening to catch up, mate.
Yeah, we will guaranteed do this again. All we have to do is decide on which of the numerous topics we should cover in the next one.
Sounds good.
Thanks again, mate.
All right, thanks.
I'm going to jump back in here just to say a quick note that, as you can imagine, Peter's service, Commit Action, is something I highly recommend for entrepreneurs. And if you're not already a member, there's a special bonus productivity training module Peter made that you get when you join specifically through my affiliate link. So if you're looking to do that, the URL is commitaction.com, no spaces, /Hansen, H-A-N-S-E-N. Thanks for listening to this episode of The Andrew Hansen Show. If you have a question or a comment about something you heard on the show today, I'd love to hear from you. If you're listening to the show on andrewhanson.name, you can leave a comment on the post below you there, or you can join our private Facebook group that also happens to have some pretty high-level SEO, affiliate marketing, and authority site building tips and strategies being shared regularly. You can request an invite to that Facebook group by going to andrewhanson.name/FB. If you liked the episode today, I'd really appreciate you leaving it a review and a rating on iTunes as well. Thanks again, and I'll see you next time.